All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, every Wednesday and Friday, sitting right here, playing something. And with me, of course, is my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales. Ryan.
Why do you sound so happy?
Why not? I am happy. It's Friday. It's 5 p.m. It's happy hour. I'm supposed to be happy if it's happy hour.
I know.
Yay. And it being Friday, of course, you know that we are going to be taking a look at lately what we've been doing for the past now 18 weeks, looking at music from the British Invasion. Been a ton of fun doing
That's
this.
That's why you sound so happy.
I enjoy these shows. They're a lot of fun for me. Mm-hmm. Last week especially was great because last week I just felt like some of my favorite songs of all were coming up. I mean, we're right now by this, since we're playing all of these songs more or less chronologically as they were hits in America, basically as they reached our shores, it's this being the 18th show, we are now into the year 1967. We're pretty much picking up smack dab in the middle of the Summer of Love. So let's get right to it. It's hard to remember this, but you don't think of Engelbert Humperdinck as being a guy who was around.
I don't think of him as a Summer of Love guy.
Definitely not. Right? But, you know, he was there in the middle of this,
but he was
actually
a hip swinger, I guess.
Huge in England. The hip swinger,
so to
in England.
Speak.
Not as much here in America, but because all of his songs seem to go top 10 in Great Britain. Here, most of them ended up only reaching the easy listening charts. But his first hit, which was Release Me, was a huge hit here. And so was this song as well. This this track actually went up to, let's see, number 20 on the pop charts for Engelbert. So right in the middle of the Summer of Love, there he was singing There Goes My Everything.
There goes my only possession. There goes my everything. I hear footsteps slowly walking as they gently walk across a lonely floor, and a voice is softly saying, darling, this will be goodbye forevermore. There goes my reason for living. There goes the one of my dreams. There goes my only possession. Turns back the pages, I can see the happy years we had before. Now the love that kept this old heart beating has been shattered by the closing of the door.
Engelbert Humperdinck.
I think my parents probably liked Engelbert Humperdinck. I'm going to guess that that was like a song that my dad would have been singing around the kitchen or something.
I remember when I was a kid, we did have one Engelbert Humperdinck album in the house.
Ooh.
And, you know, it was really weird. Actually, when I was younger, I think this was around 10, 11 years old, when I was first learning to play drums, I remember using that as one of my, like, lessons. I would play the drums to the Engelbert Humperdinck album, which is weird, really. I mean, considering
good choice.
Right? Maybe it was because I could, you know, I was able to, so it felt like, oh, I can play this. So,
look,
you know,
I could be on an album.
You really wonder what
it's
you really did do
of
back in the day.
Matchstick men, but you know.
Right. The other thing that I pretended to be playing on all the time. Oh, boy. Anyway, looking at music from the British Invasion, smack dab in the middle of the Summer of Love. And if you were going to think of one song that defined the Summer of Love, is there anything that comes to mind? Or am I basically, is that like a too obscure of a question?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know if I could name anything in particular.
Yeah, if you looked at some of the songs.
Something
titles,
about flowers in your hair.
Yeah, I could see that. Right. You think about if you're going to San Francisco, be
yeah.
sure to have flowers in your hair, stuff like that. Songs that were very popular, just so that you would know, would American hits, were Pleasant Valley Sunday by the Monkees, Light My Fire by the Doors, Stevie Wonder, I Was Made to Love Her, Ode to Billy Joe was a hit this Summer of Love. Frankie Valli, I Can't Take My Eyes Off of You.
None of those songs really seem like Summer of Love songs to me, though. I would think something like Jefferson Airplane would be a Summer of Love type band.
You're probably thinking, I guess I would probably think in just generally of California. Yeah, I think when I think of the
Mamas and the Papas.
Definitely.
Maybe.
Absolutely. Yes, I agree completely. That's the sort of thing that I would be thinking of as well. But then
reality is different.
Well, I guess the one song that when it really comes down to it, that I think really does manage to do a better job of summing that up would be the Beatles, since the Beatles were still around
mm-hmm.
and the Beatles were pretty much the zeitgeist of their times. And right in the middle of Summer of Love, the Beatles released a track called All You Need Is Love, which is kind of perfect. It was the A-side of their summer single. It was the single that was on the charts that corresponded with the release of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. So they were obviously at the absolute point of their game creatively.
Yeah, but are they really a Summer of Love band?
Well, this song is, I would say, is definitely a Summer of Love song.
Okay.
Lennon had more or less written it deliberately because there was a TV show in Great Britain. The name is eluding me. I think it was called Our World. And the point of this show was they were going to have different groups broadcasting songs from all of these, like something like a 15 or 20 different countries were all going to be having one artist contribute something live during this broadcast. And it was supposed to be, you know, live TV, which made it special. So the Beatles gathered all of their friends together in the studio. You see the footage. You see Mick Jagger coming in, and I believe Marianne Faithfull, and the Beatles sitting around looking all dressed up in their psychedelic, you know, paraphernalia, and a orchestra sitting in the background, and they launched into this song, and it ended up being, and what it is it's a worldwide simple plea for peace, a very simple one. John would eventually get a lot more complex on that subject, no doubt about it.
Yes.
He pretty much dedicated his entire solo career to that as an issue, but this is probably the first time that the Beatles decided to address it directly. And you could play Name That Tune during, you've probably heard it 1,000 times, but other than opening up with the French national anthem, as the song fades, you can listen for 4 other songs that just tiny little clips take place in the background. You'll hear somebody mumble the word yesterday as though they're about to sing that. You'll also hear She Loves You, their old song, and you'll hear Glenn Miller's In the Mood from the orchestra, and also a bit of Greensleeves as the song fades out. Here it is, All You Need Is Love.
Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. say. Nothing you can do, but you can learn how to be you in time. It's easy. All you need is love. All you need is love. All you need is love. Love. Love is all you need.
I think that the Beatles were the king of the fade out.
Yeah, they were always didn't know how to end a song, I guess. I don't know.
Well, just that their fade outs.
They did it well.
That's just it. Their fade outs are always so remarkably interesting. You always wanted to turn it up and hear it, what was happening at the fade out, because they always had interesting little bits going on as the song faded that you really wanted to know what was going on. I mean, songs like I Am the Walrus and Strawberry Fields and that song, all have got so many things. And just, you know, you could just listen to the fade. Over and over again. Yeah, the Beatles were definitely the kings of that. They're keeping you hanging on, even as the song vanishes into thin air. The other thing that was interesting about this as a single is it was one of the few where you could say that the major songwriter for both the A side and the B side was John Lennon. Didn't happen often with the Beatles. You know, usually McCartney was getting the edge on at least one of the two sides. Usually what would be depicted as the A side. But in this instance, it was John who's pretty much... the principal songwriter on both the A and the B side, as he took the lead vocal on both sides of this single. The B side, only rose as high as number 34 in America, but it's worth playing, mostly because, well, it's a Beatles song, and Beatles songs are always worth playing. You know, they've lasted, everybody still loves everything that the Beatles have recorded, pretty much. And it's also because the song stands in pretty much in a steep contrast to the happy, worldwide, all love, you know, love everybody's sentiment of all you need is love. The B-side was a song called Baby, You're a Rich Man. And it sounds like it's just flat out condemning somebody for basically having money and not knowing what he's going to do with it. Whether, you know, could John be reflecting on his own wealth? Most of the conjecture was that he was singing about his manager, Brian Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, there's actually, you know, John had a pretty nasty streak sometimes.
Yes.
A sense of humor that could go really, you know, really cutting. And the Beatles manager, who was a rich man, was also a Jew, and he was gay. So as the lyrics in the song go, baby, you're a rich man too. There's a demo where John sings those words as, baby, you're a rich fag Jew.
Oh, nice.
Like, oh. So, and it was 2 weeks after that, by the way, that their manager was found dead in his apartment.
Oops.
Of an alleged overdose of some sort of, like, I think it was sleeping.
Barbiturates or something.
Barbiturates or something like that, yeah. Not necessarily a suicide, but very possible. So it's really weird to think that John would have been writing a song about the meaninglessness of being wealthy and perhaps aiming it at their own manager at a time when the manager, unwittingly to anybody, probably especially John, knowing that he would have been even remotely that vulnerable at its time. But it adds a certain poignancy to the song, I think. Here it is, baby, you're a rich man. Yet another classic single by the Beatles. Back, you know, it's really weird. When you get to, like, the Beatles part of these shows of the British Invasion, you just feel compelled to play the A-side and the B-side because, in fact, usually the A-side is something that's gotten, in a way, saturation as far as airplay, and the B-side is fascinating. Pete, a regular listener and a good friend of mine, actually just called up mentioning that he believes that that the song was actually a sort of a composite of a Lennon-McCartney, with McCartney being responsible for the chorus of the song. And that is McCartney singing in unison with Lennon on that part. Mm-hmm. So, and you know what?
That's believable.
Very believable. It sounds like that would make sense.
That sounds perfectly logical.
It still, like, basically stands to me as, like, a song where John's, like, you know, pretty much got the lead vocal on both sides, which still makes it a bit unusual. But, yeah, it does seem likely that there's a bit of that song that was written by Paul. Not that, you know, which gave John even more reason to want to, you know, jibe with the lyrics a little bit, as he did when he was, you know, in a playful mood. I have yet another band I want to play back-to-back songs by right now. We've been playing, we touched on this band last week for a little bit. They were one of the bands that were very late to the party as far as becoming famous here in America. But they made up for their absence rather quickly with a number of fairly big hits. That is, we're talking about the Hollies. When Bus Stop went to number 5, Stop, Stop, Stop was at a hit at number 7. On a Carousel went to number 11. And then apparently there was something like a label change. So it's fairly interesting. We're going to hear this from this band twice. The first track is from the label that they were on up until this point. It was on the Imperial label. And I guess in order to, they released this song in order to compete with what they were going to be releasing on their new label, because the Hollies had moved to Epic. And they were just about to release their Epic release, so I figured that Imperial probably wanted to more or less challenge it. So you ended up with two Hollies singles released virtually simultaneously at the height of the Summer of Love. So first we're going to hear the Imperial single called Pay You Back With Interest, and we'll follow that up immediately with the track that was their first hit for Epic.
Too many people need me. I've got so much, so much to do. But when my traveling is over, I'll be back with interest. I'll be back with interest. It seems unfair to leave you and sell myself the way I do. But when
where is your magic disappearing? Hey, your game, now can anybody play? Hey, Carrie Ann, what's your game, now can anybody play?
Quite a piece of work, that yeah. song, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good song.
Yeah, awesome harmonies. It's well written. I wonder what the inspiration was for the steel drum solo. You know,
I don't know. They had a lot of island influences on in Great Britain, though.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that was just brought in as like an attempt at psychedelia too, because it was just like, you know, the Summer of Love, man. You're talking about, you know, throw in the kitchen sink, try it. And if it sticks, keep it in, you know. But I just, you know, it was a cool idea. It's great because it's very unique.
Right.
It's something different. You know,
sure.
It's still different. You hear it now and you're like, wow, you know, very unique. Anyway, that's cool. Two from the Hollies that were both on the charts at about the same time. Naturally, Carrie Ann was the bigger hit as they had now moved to their new label, Epic. Carrie Ann actually reached the top 10, stopping at number 9, while Pay You Back with Interest only went up to number 28.
Hmm.
All right, then. I've been talking about, like, last week, I think I was talking about how that really was, like, just seemed to capture the era of the British Invasion. That was probably my favorite because so many of my favorite songs were all on the same show.
Right.
Some of that is bleeding into this show because of this very next song, which is definitely one of my favorite songs of all time. Like, I can almost never not hear this song without getting goosebumps. This is one of those records that my parents got me when I was a little kid. I remember it was an Easter present. It's just, you know, you didn't get as much for Easter as you did for Christmas. Christmas, my parents went crazy. Easter, I just, you know, you get the candy basket. And because they knew I liked music, I'd get a record album. One year, I remember I got Inagata De Vida by Iron Butterfly for Easter. And I think it was the year before that, probably 67, that I got the Bee Gees' first album, which to this day is still one of my favorite albums
of
all time.
Absolutely.
That album, Inagata De Vida, I find it almost impossible to listen to now. Even though I, you know, usually when you get into things when you're young, it sticks with you, but not that album. That no.
Sometimes you realize the error of your ways.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one instance
for
that.
It shows personal growth.
But I never outgrew the Bee Gees album at all. In fact, I probably just continued to grow into it more. And I think the reason is that, I mean, there was so much about that album that was fantastic. We played the leadoff single last week, which was New York Mining Disaster, 1941.
Right.
Which was with a lead by Robin. But on this track, it's Barry, the older brother, who sings the lead on this song. And he kind of just proves just how soulful they really were. It's incredible to imagine that they could be this soulful. To this day, it stuns me. there's a lot of cover versions of this song, a lot of people who have done it, from the Flying Burrito Brothers right on down. And I don't think anybody has come near touching that really deep, reaching into your own gut feeling that Barry Gibb does when he sings this song from the Bee Gees' first, called To Love Somebody.
There's a light kind of light that never shone on me. I want my life to be a little. There's a way, everybody said, to do each and every little thing. But what does it bring if I ain't got you, ain't got baby?
You don't know what it's like,
baby. You don't know what it's like
to love somebody, to love somebody the way I love you.
In my parade, I see your face again. I know. So glad I'm a man. Can't you see what I am? I live and I breathe for you. But what good does it do if I ain't got you? Ain't got you.
To love somebody the way I love you. To love somebody the way I love you.
Still awesome.
You notice they throw in that little Janis Joplin-esque bit at the end, that na-na-na-na-na thing.
That was Robin, I think, the guy getting his bit in, one of the twins with the high voice. Hey, you know, how many great pop songs can claim to have, you know, timpani that can give you goosebumps, or harp? I mean, there's harp on that song. It's really
there's
quite
not
a
lot
of
harp even in classical music.
Really?
That's why my friend who was a classical harpist was a principal harpist for three different symphonies.
Yeah, because not many people. There's not much call for it. You're right.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is all basically Robert Stigwood, who was their English mentor, who was doing all of the stuff for them. Eventually, started the record label RSO for Robert Stigwood Organization. That was. With the Bee Gees.
Oh.
By the time they were like in their disco years, that's
yeah, they were there.
On RSO.
Yep. I never knew what that stood for.
There you go.
Learn something new every day.
Still one of my favorite albums, though. One of my favorite hit singles right there by the Bee Gees, To Love Somebody. Now, one of the guys who had pretty much seemed to have totally lost his mind during the Summer of Love was Eric Burdon.
Too much acid.
maybe. Too many happy pills or something. I mean, this is the guy who, you know, basically disbanded the Animals because he was fighting with his manager because he didn't like the material that his manager was giving him, wanted to play the blues. I keep telling the story. And then he goes off on his solo and plays, you know, nothing bad yet. Yet up until now, because now this is like where the British invasion begins to shift. You got to notice that there's going to be as we go forward to the end of when we start covering this. I'm probably going to take this to the end of 1969, I believe,
mm-hmm.
but or thereabouts anyway. But a lot of the British
not
invasion
tonight, though,
artists,
are you?
No, definitely not tonight. We're not going to get past 67 today.
Okay,
but. Should a lot we? Of the British artists are now, because they've made enough money, they're now coming to America, some of them to live in America. Eric Burdon, around this time, made that move.
Who didn't want to be in America at this time?
Yeah,
Being in America was great at this time.
Well, there was that huge California draw was just, at this point in time, just impossible to avoid. Everybody wanted to end up at Hyde-Ashbury.
Yeah.
It was just a destination, the
that
place to go.
That was the cross street.
It was like where all hippie seas were running in that direction.
Oh, yeah.
And Eric Burdon apparently was basically no longer as concerned with the blues as he was. And now he was basically becoming obsessed with psychedelic music. And he was in love with San Francisco. So he wrote a song, which was a set with his new group, the New Animals, which was essentially a love letter to San Francisco. And I think it's pretty funny. I just think it's kind of that ridiculous.
Well, a lot of hippies were, you know.
Yeah, but I love hippie music. Most hippie music I just happen to love.
You are a closet hippie.
But yeah, this takes it in the other direction. This is like just flat out silly, I think. But that's my opinion. When he gets to the part about good cop, bad cop, it just cracks me up. Eric Burdon and the Animals singing about San Franciscan nights.
This following program is dedicated to the city and people of San Francisco, who may not know it, but they are beautiful, and so is their city. This is a very personal song, so if the viewer cannot understand it, particularly those of you who are European residents, save up all your bread and fly Translove Airways to San Francisco, USA. Then maybe you'll understand the song. It will be worth it. If not for the sake of this song, but for the sake of your own peace of mind.
Strobe lights beam, create streams. Walls move, minds do too. On a warm San Franciscan night. Old child, young child, feel all right on a warm San Franciscan night. Angels sing, leather wings, jeans of blue, Harley Davidson's tree on a warm San Franciscan night. Old angel, young angel, feel all right on a warm San Franciscan night. I wasn't born there, perhaps I'll die there. There's no place left to go. San Francisco. Is filled with hate. Heavens above, he's on a street called love. When will they ever learn? Old cop, young cop, feel alright on a warm San Franciscan night. The children are cool, they don't raise fools. An American dream includes Indians too.
Includes Indians too?
It's far out, man.
It's so ludicrous. Okay, it was old cop, young cop, not good cop, bad cop. But
yeah,
I swear
close
to God,
enough.
When I hear him singing that song, I just get I imagine him like wearing a Campbell soup can around his neck, like
the guy from the Producers,
like Dick Shawn and the Producers. Shawn, yeah. Exactly. I mean, I could imagine Dick Shawn singing that song. It's too perfect.
Tiptoeing across the stage in a spotlight.
Exactly. Flowers, throwing flowers to the audience. It's so funny. Crazy.
It does paint a very psychedelic picture, though. You can envision like those oil lights shining on a disco, you know, on the whatever they called them at that point.
Yeah, those projections that they did for the shows.
Yeah.
Definitely. like at the Fillmore shows.
Totally groovy.
Absolutely. That's exactly what he's talking about, really. Now, there was another artist who came from Great Britain at the pretty much the exact same time to settle here in America. He actually came from Ireland, though, and he had no real interest in settling in California. He decided to come to New York. I'm talking about Van Morrison. He was with them. We had played, I think only had the opportunity to play one track by them this whole time.
Yeah, because, you haven't played much at all.
Yeah, well, none of their songs really hit the top 40, I think.
That's right, we were talking about
which
that.
Which is kind of stunning. The song like Gloria, for example, never was a hit for Van Morrison and them. It was only a hit for a band called Shadows of Night as an American band.
Right.
So it's not a British Invasion hit if it's done by an American band, so we couldn't play it in this series of shows.
Skip over it.
But anyway, it was ridiculous that that happened. So the band breaks up. The guy who was their manager at the time, Burt Burns, as I believe, came to America, and he had started a label called Bang. And I found out where that name came from. It was actually the first letter of all the people's names who were originally involved with the forming of the label.
Oh.
Burt was the B. Amit Erdogan from Atlantic Records. His brother Nesui was the N, and Jerry Wexler was Gerald Wexler is the G, so that was Bang Records.
There you go.
In short order, though, Burt took it over himself and had a decent number of hits. I remember that, the McCoys were on that label. Hang On Sloopy was one hit that they had on Bang Records. Neil Diamond was on Bang for a while.
Hmm.
And, of course, this is where Van Morrison ended up. But Burt was really trying to keep everybody on the pop side of things. And by 1967, the artists themselves were thinking outside of the pop box, as
right.
everybody was.
Sure.
And so there was a lot of headbutting.
Yeah, that's
that was
not
going
cool.
On. Yeah, a lot of headbutting. By he literally lost Neil Diamond because Neil Diamond wanted to release a song called Shiloh. Burt Burns refused to release it. So Neil Diamond quit the label until his contract ran out and then went over to Uni. So that was he lost his big star right there. And then he started having the exact same problem with Van Morrison. And it turns out that they were fighting a lot. And then whether it's a coincidence or not, I can't say, but Burns ends up having a heart attack and dying.
Oh, dear.
Like right in the middle of all of this. So his wife takes over the label. And now his wife refuses to let Van Morrison out of his contract. And there's all of this, like, these stories of thuggery and, you know, basically mafia influences and strong-arming that's a part of it. And Van Morrison was forced to record. Basically, they wouldn't let him go unless he promised to give them 3 singles a month for 10 months.
Oh, my goodness.
Who comes up with 3 singles a month? So the funniest thing that he did, and if you hear it, it's pretty hysterical.
I wish you had
context.
That here with you.
Yeah, Van Morrison recorded these 31 songs. Each one is about 30 seconds long or a minute long. We just made them up on the spot. In 30 minutes, he wrote 30 songs.
And it's funny because they're like, you can almost imagine like the conversations that he was having with these people that he wrote these songs, like, come on, we need another brown-eyed girl.
Right, exactly.
Now.
So he writes, okay, then here's one. It's called Shake and Roll. Shake and roll, shake and roll. You got to shake and roll. Here's another one. It's called Roll and Shake. You got to roll and shake. Got to roll and shake. Then
it's
another
pretty,
one is like,
it's pretty hilarious.
I want to eat a Danish. I need a Danish.
I mean, it's just, is that ridiculous?
It is that ridiculous. And as it goes on, it gets funnier and funnier. But right in the middle of it, the reason this was all coming about is because he did give them that one huge hit, Brown Eyed Girl. And we've heard it a billion times, but it was
million
in the
times,
summer of love.
Now, billion, millions.
I will say one thing that will make this play of it a little bit different than what you've been hearing. Brown Eyed Girl is now available universally in about a million places, but only in the edited form. There's a part of the last verse where he sings about making love in the green grass with you.
Yeah,
and for some reason,
they can't say that.
That was determined that that couldn't be said. Yeah. Now, the thing is, people were singing about making love for, my gosh, back in the 30s, 40s.
Of course.
Why are they suddenly editing it out of a song in 1967? I have no idea, but they did.
Somehow it became lurid in his hands.
Right. So what they did was they just took the phrase that he had sung in the first verse and chopped it in.
Yeah.
So it's not there. But I have the original album, Blowin' Your Mind is what it's called. I have the original vinyl album. So that is where you can find the song in its original form without the edit. So I'm going to play it. And I hope you're not offended by the fact that he sings about making love behind the stadium. It's the original version of Brown Eyed Girl.
Blowing when the rains came. Down in the hollow, playing a new game. Laughing and running, hey, hey. Skipping and jumping. In the misty morning fog with all our hearts that thumping. And you, my brown eyed girl. And whatever happened to Tuesday and so slow? Gone down the old man with a transistor radio. Standing in the sunlight laughing, hiding behind a rainbow's wall. Slipping and sliding all along the waterfall with you, my brown-eyed girl. We used to sing sha la 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 la, just like that. Sha la 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 la. You have grown. Cast my memory back there, Lord. Sometimes I'm overcome thinking about making love in the green grass behind the stadium with you, my brown-eyed girl. You, my brown-eyed girl. Do you remember when we used to sing sha la 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 la. Well, there it is again. You know that song, of course. Still gets airplay all the time.
I know, it's shocking.
It's incredible. Van Morrison. That, but there you have
That's
it.
That's why I'm prejudiced against it. It's really a great song, but it's just so overplayed. I can't believe you played it. But
Well, yeah, there's so much. Of course, there's only so much you can take as far as hearing the same song over and over again. But you're right, it's a great song, no matter what. And then the reason it's getting played so much is because it's a great song. But after a while, it does, like, you know, please. The guy's got 50 albums, probably.
Yeah,
you know.
His catalog goes deep. You could pick another song.
Right, spread it around. Because if I heard that song once a year or so, I'd love it.
Yeah,
I love it. You know,
that'd be plenty.
That'd be plenty. But there you have it, the unedited version there. Looking at music from the British Invasion music from the Summer of Love. And this is, as you can see, it's a lot of fun to be doing this. I'm very interested in this time period. And if you're enjoying the show, and if you're interested in perhaps hearing the
play
rest
it
of the series,
and, again.
And you want to hear it again and again and again and again, it's really easy. You can go to our website. We post all of our shows live. The first 17 shows of this series are posted there right now. You could just go and check it out. Just get on your computer, type in American Hit Network as a search, and sure enough, you'll see that our website will come up. It's the very first thing you're going to see.
Bam.
That's simple. And once you get to our homepage, our Wednesday show is on the left side. This show, the Friday show, is on the right-hand side. And on the right-hand side, you will be able to see all of these shows.
Yes.
And you can just, there's a button that says see more, and just click on, you can pretty much hunt. They're all click and play.
You can play it all during the holiday break, even.
Exactly.
You get a lot of work done.
You could play them now.
You could do it now, but, you know, if you have several days in a row, you're just wondering what to do besides eat, you know, big holiday meals.
Could be fun. Get the entire history of the British Invasion in chronological order. What could be better than that?
Ooh.
My gosh. Maybe I'm going to go home and do that when this is done.
Little claps. Yay.
All right, then. Let's get back to it because I got two more I want to play.
Yeah, and it's already 5:50.
Right. I've got 10 minutes to do it. So, okay. This next track, actually, this is sort of like a hippie anthem. It's become a hippie anthem in a sense.
Ooh, I can't wait.
The track, there's no doubt about it that that's what happened. It was a track by Donovan. And it's interesting because the song was used by hippie bands, really, in a lot of different ways. As a single, it was just like a really great acoustic, charming sing-along song. Just like a really nice, happy, great sing-along song. Mm-hmm. But then like the Grateful Dead picked up on it and started using it. Mm-hmm. On a lot of their material. Apparently, they even, like, you know, they allude to the melody on when they have one of the most famous jams, a song called The Other One, is a part of this song. And even the Allman Brothers Band, when they put out the album Eat a Peach.
Yeah.
The original album, Eat a Peach, had something on it called Mountain Jam. And it was one song that was literally two entire sides of the album.
Wow.
It was 21 minutes on one record and 22 minutes on the other. About 45 minutes.
That's a serious
minutes.
Mountain jam.
That was one long jam. But it was actually almost never boring. It's like, it's really an excellent piece of music. But it was based on this theme. This is the thing that launches them into this 45-minute, you know, jam that constitutes that 45-minute record.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the single that kicked it all off by Donovan, a little 2.5-minute ditty called There Is a Mountain.
Look up on my garden, it's a snail, that's what it is. Sheds its skin to find a butterfly within. Caterpillar shed its skin to find a butterfly within. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain. Shed his skin to find a butterfly within.
The original version of that seems like it's virtually forgotten, and yet...
Yeah, I don't think I ever heard it, but it totally reminded me of Syd Barrett.
I could absolutely hear what you're saying. I mean, it sounds like he's like the relatively sane-minded person picking
yeah.
up where
Syd... Yeah, Syd Barrett was like crazy and doing acid. This guy's like sane and doing acid.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I can't say he picked up where Syd left off, because at this point, Syd was probably just, you know, kind of getting started as well.
Oh.
You know, it's the Summer of Love. So
that's true.
Yeah, so they were sort of contemporaries, now that I'm thinking about it. All right, then, we've got time for one more. And this is another one of those songs that, defines the Summer of Love. It actually became a very huge hit here in America. And it's really unfair that I would want to consider Lulu a one-hit wonder, because she had plenty of hits in England.
Right.
And she had other singles that charted in America, but nothing considerably, you know, high. In fact, she only got into the
top... She's obviously well enough remembered, though.
Yeah, but she's only been in the top 40 like 2 or 3 times, I believe. And but this track went to number one. So, obviously...
Well, she was a number one hit.
Well, there's a few things about her that you should know before we play the track that I find very interesting. First of all, she was married to one of the two twins of the Bee Gees. She did marry Maurice for a while, eventually divorced, but they were together. She was also had a very interesting, huge hit version in England of the song Shout when she was younger, which was really kind of pretty good. It was really powerful for her. She also went on to basically sing that song Here Comes the Night, which was a hit for Van Morrison and them.
Mm-hmm.
And she sang it before they did. She sang it before Van Morrison. So I give her credit for that. And what
she's got a nice voice.
Yeah, I'd like to find that, actually. And what I really want to find, because I didn't know this until today, was that apparently around 1970, you know, 3 years after this track was recorded, she came to Muscle Shoals to record an entire album, very much like Dusty Springfield would eventually do. And then she released a single that was both sides written and produced by David Bowie.
Wow.
So I'm like, really? I mean, considering how much I'm a Bowie fan, in 1970,
yeah.
I would imagine that's going to be a very interesting single to find. But in the meantime, the one song that we all remember her for happens to be the song that was taken from a movie of the same name and
Kiss
still
Her With Love.
Absolutely one of
beautiful.
The most beautiful songs. So everybody, thank you very much. Hope you can join us next week. And don't forget to visit us on the website, American Hit Radio. Take care, everyone. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye. Now.